This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Film critic T.T. Stern Enzi says the age of franchise filmmaking has arrived. In his new essay, he argues those franchises are most meaningful when a gifted filmmaker takes greater control of the stories. And some of his favorite franchises showcase the power and influence of fathers and father figures. So just in time for Father's Day, film critic T.T. Stern Enzi joins me now to talk about how these filmmakers explore the role dads play for good guys and bad guys alike. Welcome back, TT.
Great. Glad to be here.
Great. It's always fun to have you. I mentioned your essay this month is about franchise visionaries. It's a terrific read. I'm encouraging everybody to go to our website, wvxu.org, to check it out. Let's talk about some of those fathers and father figures in those franchises. You start with The Godfather. I think most of us think about this as a crime story, but it's also a story about family, isn't it?
It is a story of family both in front of and behind the camera. And again, when we're talking about fathers and father figures, you can't, this is where it starts and stops in a lot of ways. You've got Francis Ford Coppola, who is in charge of this entire franchise. He worked with his father as, you know, in handling the music for the film. A lot of people have issues with the third film where, of course, he actually uses his own daughter, Sophia, as a pivotal character in that story. She took a lot of grief over that. He, as the father that he is, I remember at the time kind of stepping up and really trying to take a lot of the responsibility on himself and take it away from her, which it must have worked really well because she's now entered the field and is working as a very capable and exciting director as well. So that's all just behind the scenes. And then, of course, you get to the story itself, which is about an aging Don who is trying to figure out how to pass on his power and influence and his empire to one of his sons. The second film shows you the early Don as a young man, paralleling with that with the story of his son who has taken over. And then, of course, yes, the final story takes us with Michael looking at his life and trying to figure out what he could have done differently and looking at his own children as well as part of the mix. So yeah, you're getting fatherhood all over the place in every nook and cranny of the Godfather franchise that you want. And again, it works so well because, again, Francis Ford Coppola is there for each of the stories every step of the way. He is really the father of everything that goes on in that franchise.
I want to hear about some of the father-son moments in the films that really stand out to you. There's this scene in the hospital.
Just lie here, Bob. I'll take care of you now. I'm with you now. I'm with you.
That feels like a classic. Are there others that come to mind for
you? That totally does. And it's really funny because as I was listening to that play, yes, that starts the dynamic right there. And then, of course, later in the film, after Michael has done all of the things that he needs to do to protect the family, to take, you know, an enemy out, and he ends up having to leave the country, when he's getting ready to come back, there's that great scene with all of the families together where they're talking about what Michael's return will look like. And Vito Corleone, played by Marlon Brando, tells the gathering, like, okay, here's the deal. You know, if anything happens to my son when he comes back, if he should, you know, get shot or hit by a car or there's an act of God, he's like, whatever it is, I'm coming for all of you because I'm protecting my son. Which is interesting because we just heard the son in that clip say, wait a minute, I'm here with you, Dad.
Yeah.
I'm here for the family.
Yeah. Do you come away thinking Vito Corleone and his son Michael are ultimately good fathers, bad fathers? Is it more complicated than that?
It would be very easy and probably very right to say that they're both bad fathers.
Wow, that did not take long.
Yeah, I mean, you can't escape the idea that, again, Vito has three sons and a daughter. None of their lives come out the way that I'm sure a father would want them to come out. you know, one of the sons kills the other. Yeah, it's just it's a mess. And Michael's family is not much different. Again, it's the hiding, the deceit, the murder, everything that's going on is part of this. So, yeah, you at that most basic level, they're horrible dads. But each of them in their own ways always has a moment in the films where you see them trying and they're struggling with this and they want to believe that there's a better way out. Vito doesn't want Michael to get involved in the family business at all and would rather do anything he could to keep him out. But once he gets in, he's in for a pound.
Yeah.
And, you know, Michael's family doesn't exactly follow that same path, but they have to deal with the repercussions of their father being in the business that he's in. So, yeah, it's complicated. And when you start to think about the nuances and probably the very human interactions that take place along the way, but ultimately, yeah, they're bad dads.
Well, I'm talking with film critic T.T. Stern Enzi about the father figures in some of his favorite film franchises. Do you have a favorite movie dad? Give us a call at 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Let's talk about Sam Raimi's The Spider-Man movies. There in your essay, remind us how important Peter Parker's Uncle Ben is as a father figure in this trilogy.
You know, we think an awful lot about the pivotal father figures in comics in general, you know, or parents as a whole. Bruce Wayne's parents dying, that sets the stage for everything that he does. You know, Superman's birth parents sending him away from a planet that's about to die and explode, the family that takes him in, the Kents who take him in once he lands, you know, on Earth, they are all very pivotal, identifiable stories that whether you read comics or not, you know a little bit about those dynamics. And I feel like Peter Parker is probably the third. And it is probably even more tragic in some ways in his case because we don't know that much about his parents necessarily at all, but we do know about Uncle Ben and Aunt May, and Uncle Ben in particular, because he could have prevented his uncle's death. He was in a moment. He had just gotten his powers. He wanted to try to make a buck, wasn't really worried or thinking about what was going on in the moment, and the person that he allowed to get away ends up being the person who kills his uncle, and he finds that out. But it is what he does after that that matters so much. And what he does after that is he remembers the lesson that his uncle gave him. And it's that lesson that every person in the culture, not just comic book culture, but culture as a whole knows.
Yeah.
With great power comes great responsibility.
We have Uncle Ben saying that.
Remember, with great power comes great responsibility.
And that was a lesson that he tried to teach Peter shortly before his death. But don't you feel like that's what kind of carries this transformation from Peter into this kind of a brat with superpowers into a superhero?
It does. But it also, and again, I don't want to slight the journey that Peter goes on because he's a kid.
Right.
And I think it is difficult for us to sometimes remember that he was a kid in that moment. But it's fascinating because after that moment, when he fully embraces the mantra that he got from his uncle, he still retains that kind of fun, playful, childlike spirit, even in the most dire circumstances. He's always cracking a joke. He holds on to that. So he didn't lose his uncle and then accept this responsibility and all of the weight and the darkness around it, unlike, say, for instance, Batman, who never has a light moment in any way. And it's good to see and understand, and you probably hope that Peter got that lightness or holds on to that lightness because he remembers his uncle in that way. And yeah. It's kind of, that makes it special.
Yeah. Well, we're going to talk about Batman, but first I want to ask you another Spider-Man question. In the Spider-Man lore, Peter Parker has these other father figures, J. Jonah Jameson, the newspaper editor who he's working as a photographer for, even people who become supervillains like the Green Goblin and Doc Ock, Dr. Octopus, they start out as kind of mentors, father figures. What do you think that tells us about the complicated role father figures can play in our lives? And that might even go back to The Godfather that we were just talking
right.
about.
You know, it's interesting. It probably does. And I think what Sam Raimi was so great at capturing, especially in the first two films, I think it goes a little off the rails in the third film in a lot of ways. But, you know, for me, I think Spider-Man 2 might be one of the really, really great comic book films of all time. And that Doc Ock character, who is Peter's mentor in the beginning, and then has this weird descent into villainy, you see them towards the end where they recognize, Doc Ock recognizes, oh my God, I've created this horrible thing that is going to have a much darker impact on the world than I ever would have considered. But it takes him seeing and recognizing Peter to think, well, wait a minute, maybe there's a redemption for me. You know, I don't have to go out as a villain. And that's, again, one of those complicated pieces of this, which is really fascinating. The Green Goblin character kind of goes in and out of that sometimes, but that second film works so well because of that dynamic. And it does offer a glimpse of a possible redemption for the father figure through his connection with his surrogate son, if you will.
Hmm. Well, let's talk about Batman. You also write about Christopher Nolan's The Dark Knight trilogy in your essay. You mentioned it. I think we all know the origin story of Batman, how his parents were gunned down in front of him when he was just a boy. In some iterations of this franchise, Batman becomes a father figure to Robin after Robin is orphaned. But there's no Robin in the Christopher Nolan trilogy. How do you think Bruce Wayne's father looms large in this trilogy, though, as Christopher Nolan presents it?
Yeah, I'm not sure that it's necessarily his father in particular that looms large. I think it is the father figures. You know, you've got Morgan Freeman as Lucius Fox. You've got Michael Caine as Alfred the butler, who Alfred is really Bruce Wayne's real father figure, if you will, in the series. And I love the scenes in, especially The Dark Knight. There's that great scene where Alfred is kind of telling Batman about his experiences before he came to work for the Waynes, and that notion of running into someone who is so difficult and so powerful because they're willing to do anything at any cost. He's giving him a life lesson, but he's also giving him a lesson as a crime fighter to understand that, yeah, you think you're doing something good, but you have to understand that there are going to be people out in the world who will laugh at your notion of what the good thing is and will force you to do the far harder thing. And we see that play out in the series so well. And in some ways, I feel like that is probably Christopher Nolan's tipping of his own hand as the father of this particular franchise too.
Yeah, that's one of those very strong father figure moments I think Alfred has with Bruce Wayne. I mean, the scene where he's trying to get Bruce to think differently about the Joker's possible motivation.
Some men just want to watch the world burn.
And that's the scene you're talking about, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's it.
It strikes me that Bruce Wayne, who at this point is this accomplished crime fighter, you almost get the sense that he thinks he knows everything. He's been out there fighting crime, and Alfred's there to be like, look, buddy, I've lived a life. I can tell you a little something about these people that you might not know.
And it's a fascinating moment, too, because we see these superheroes all the time, and they tend to make the right decision or they figure out ways to correct their mistakes on their own. Rarely do we get to see a hero get advice like that from someone else and someone who's not out there fighting with them. Like, that's the real kind of interesting point in that particular case that you don't even see that in comic books very often, not just comic book movies. But yeah, I think the fact that we got to see that in a scene in a film with someone like Michael Caine, you know, giving us that lesson and giving Bruce Wayne and Batman that lesson, that's powerful.
And it's something dads do all the time.
Right.
Don't get any credit for.
Right. Yeah. Very true. And again, yeah, we don't ever see Thomas Wayne in the films. He is obviously a character in the stories and in the comic books. There have been times, I guess, he's come back and done other things. But without him there, there are all of these other figures that step into that void for Bruce Wayne. And that's, again, that's one of the classics. And every Robin and everyone else in the comic books who's worked with Batman, Alfred's there for them too.
Yeah.
He's the father of them all.
Mm-hmm. And before I forget to do it, we heard clips from The Godfather, produced by Paramount Pictures, Spider-Man, produced by Sony Pictures, and The Dark Knight, produced by Warner Brothers Pictures. You have George Miller and his Mad Max franchise in your essay, too. This is not a touchy-feely movie, but even Max plays a bit of a father figure role with the kind of the wild child in the first movie. Talk about that. Do you think there's an element of fathering that's important in that movie and that trilogy?
You know, I think there is, because you're talking about a post-apocalyptic wasteland and people that are so disconnected. There's little hope, little opportunity. So anytime you get any kind of moment of parental kind of look and authority and concern, it's going to pack a real punch. The first three Mad Max films generally tend to do that with Max and children. What I find more fascinating in the two most recent films, Fury Road and then Furiosa, it is not about the fathers at all, but when you take that element away, that's where George Miller becomes even more important, because he's been, again, as the filmmaker behind all five of the films, even with all of the time that's gone on in between, he's kind of been there thinking and shepherding and kind of guiding, you know, all of these characters and this vision for this world. And he feels like, again, kind of like Coppola with The Godfather, he is the father of this franchise, and it's not even over yet. He's let us know that he's got other ideas and other things that he wants to do, and it feels like the Furiosa character in some ways is kind of the daughter that he would have wanted.
Mm.
And I find that infinitely intriguing in terms of storytelling, because he's created these spinoffs based on the idea that he's like, wait a minute, there was a vision that I had and a backstory that I had for this character. And the only way that we were ever going to understand that and see it and feel it is, he's like, I had to bring that character to the screen, which means he kind of had to give birth to that character.
Yeah. Wow. That's a really interesting way to put it. I'm going to go off topic a little bit, because I've seen Fury Road, loved it. Haven't seen Furiosa. What'd you think of Furiosa?
I think Furiosa is an intriguing installment, because ultimately it feels like there may be a chance that he's got sort of a second trilogy almost in mind, except he did them in the wrong order. He gave us Furiosa, which is really the second film, if you will, in this story. But it's chronologically second, but it comes before Fury Road, because it gives us the backstory for this character. And it's an okay film.
Hmm.
It is... Yeah, really, it's strong in its own way. Anya Taylor-Joy is really great as the young Furiosa, but it's nowhere near the kinetic energy and the excitement that you got from Fury Road, which, if you think about trilogies, the first films are usually okay to pretty good, and then that second one just blows you away, and you're never really sure about the third film.
Yeah.
So that's when I look at this now, I'm kind of like, okay, so he flipped the order of the first two. He gave us the truly, truly brilliant film, that second installment. He gave it to us first. Is he going to be able to break the curse and maybe come up with a really fascinating conclusion that kind of ends everything? I guess we'll have to wait to see if he's got another bit of fatherly advice and storytelling, and you know, that he can unleash on us.
Yeah. Overall, how important do you think these depictions of fathers are in movies? Why do you think so many of these iconic movies that we've been talking about revolve around those relationships?
I thought about this a lot on my way to the studio today, and this is going to feel really strange to do, but I think about it in terms of the Taken films.
Hmm.
Liam Neeson.
Yeah.
Three films. Again, doesn't fit into what I was writing about here, because they're all directed by different people. But he's a father trying to protect his daughter and his ex-wife across those three films. And they're action-oriented, they're mindless, all of that stuff is there. But I remember walking out of each of those films, and anytime I watch them on cable or anywhere else, I think about that idea a lot because I'm like, wow, this is a guy, yes, he had that special set of skills that da-da-da-da-da, we all know that we hear Liam Neeson yeah. say that. But at the end of the day, I walk away from it thinking, man, I would want to be able to protect my children in that way and my family like that. And that's bizarre for me as a film critic because you're not supposed to care or even think about an action-oriented film in that way, but it does. Every one of them sticks with me beyond the fact that he's probably too old to be doing it and it's unrealistic. At the end of the day, he's the ultimate dad who wants to protect.
Yeah.
And that's beautiful.
Yeah. Fight through those sore knees and make it happen.
That's right.
Well, I've been talking with film critic T.T. Stern Enzi. It is always an absolute pleasure. You can read his terrific essay right now on our website, wvxu.org. I urge you to do it right. Well, wait till the show is finished, but do it right after that. Thank you so much for your time today, T.T.
Thank you. And happy Father's Day to everyone out there.
Yeah, happy Father's Day to you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Associate producer is Asiya Johnson. Technical director is Marshall Verbsky. If you miss our program live, you can subscribe to Cincinnati Edition wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Lucy May. Thanks so much for listening.